Community pharmacy is the most accessible healthcare destination for patients. Unfortunately, this means it's also the most accessible destination for abuse and crime. We've almost come to accept that shoplifters, abusive patients, and even hold-ups are just part and parcel of our day. Irish studies indicate that 4 out of 5 pharmacists have been victims of crime in their work. Today, we're going to consider the human story behind those stats. I'm joined by Alva Harnady, who shares her extraordinary story. I'm Katrina Bradley, and this is The Resilient Pharmacist. Hello, Alva. How are you?
Hi, Katrina. How are you?
Thank you very much for joining us today. Maybe if you can just tell us a little about yourself before we start into the story.
Yeah, so I am Alva, and I qualified in 2007. I suppose I did my pre-reg, so start 2008 would have been my starting point. And I'm from Cork, and so I moved to college to Dublin and haven't moved back since. So despite trying.
And I'm from Kilkenny, so I won't hold the Cork thing against you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, so I'm now married to Adam, and I have 2 sons, Sam and Dara, and I'm a community pharmacist, yes.
Hands full with Adam and Dara.
Yes, exactly, yeah. But, and then I'm doing vaccinating at the moment as well, in the vaccination centre, so that's very interesting.
Fantastic.
Something different as well, yeah.
Oh, that's great. Fantastic. Yeah. Brilliant. So with regards to today's topic, can I bring you back to that day when you were in the pharmacy? Would you mind describing for us what it was like and what happened?
So I was newly qualified, just a couple of months. So I had other things on my mind as well, like, you know, that I'd be dispensing the right medicine and, you know, getting used to everything. And
it's always daunting at the beginning, isn't it?
Yeah. I remember going home at night just thinking, like, how many mils of water did I put into the antibiotic and stuff, you know? So I had all those other...
we've all been there.
Yeah. So then this man came in. All I could see was a big knife coming towards the counter. And I was working, I think, with that day, maybe just one other person at the time. But I remember there was a lady at the till, like an elderly lady paying for something, and he kind of pushed her out of the way and took the money in the till. And I sort of thought, like, obviously felt very sorry for the lady, but I, you know, kind of thought he was here for the money and that was it, naively, you know. Mm-hmm. But then he proceeded then to come to the pharmacy, into the dispensary, and then, you know, like, just demanded. He had all the names off, you know, like, he wanted Valium, and, you know, then he wanted methadone. He knew that wasn't the safe. And
he knew his way around a dispensary.
Yes, exactly. And Zotan seemed to be something that he wanted. So he kind of had his bag and he packed it up. And then I remember, though, when he did come to the pharmacy, the other girl I was working with kind of ran towards the back door, and there was a bit of a thing, you know, kind of a fight.
A tussle of some sort, yeah.
Yes. And I just was on the floor, but I remember just looking at the front door being like, will I just run away now? You know, like, but I was paralysed. So after that, he headed off and the guards came. And, you know, they were kind of more interested nearly in how much the products were worth than what he took exactly, you know, finding him, you know.
And had you set off a panic alarm, or was there some way in which they were alerted?
I think we had pressed that all right. I can't remember that, like, completely, but I think we did. But maybe after he left, we definitely did anyway, you know.
Yeah, exactly. And so the guards duly came.
But, like, for the rest of the day then, we spent the day sort of kind of laughing about it and looking back at ourselves on the CCTV, and, you know, it didn't feel like it happened or it was real, you know, at the time. And
can you remember, as it was happening, was it like one of those things where it's in slow motion and it's all going slowly, or does it just do you almost forget what happened?
It was really slow motion. Yeah.
Okay.
But that was fine, and that was kind of
isn't it interesting, as lots of us as pharmacists, that happens and you go, okay, sure, that's fine, we'll carry on. But it's not fine, is
it? That's the thing, yeah. So, like, are you expected to think, is it part and parcel of the job, kind of, that you're...
You can expect to be held up.
Yeah, exactly. So
you finished out your day working, did you?
Yeah, so for that day, that's what I was kind of taking it as. I was, you know, except I was going home with the bus that night, and I was a bit like, what just happened today? You know, kind of hit me then, you know, because, like, it was fine when I was with my, you know, friend who we'd gone through this together with, sort of, you know. Then I went home that night and I relaxed. I'd say I had a bit of wine. And then just the next morning, so I was due for work again the next day. Woke up like 6 o'clock, bang. It was like, you know, like with a jolt, and I was like, oh my God, I can't go to work, you know, this just can't go in there today. And
so it was hitting you at that stage.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, Adam, my husband now, was like, no, you'll be fine. He said, you know, it's the safest pharmacy in Dublin today, you know, and
yeah,
they're definitely not going to come again. Yeah, like it's perfect, you know, whatever.
Lightning doesn't strike twice.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So I headed away off to work and got in, and I was a bit like nervous. We were talking about what happened the day before, and mm-hmm. everything was grand. And like 20 minutes into the shift, I saw him across the road, you see, going in somewhere. And I said, God, is that him? But like, we just said, no, it couldn't be, you know.
Yeah.
And then.
You probably think you're starting to get paranoid at that stage.
That was it, you know. And yeah. Next thing, he just walked in the door again this day with, and brought a friend the second day. So there was two of them
Same guy, but this time a friend.
A friend with him, yeah. So they obviously.
And did he have his order list for the dispensary again?
They didn't, sure. We had everything reordered, you know.
So the safe was full of methadone.
Safe was full of methadone, ready to go again. And they had bigger bags this time, and, you know. But so this time then I was on the phone to the old owner of the shop, her wife. We were talking about sandbags. I think there was flooding mm-hmm. at the time or that. And he just ran in. And I think the friend it was maybe who just grabbed the phone off me. Mm-hmm. But he put his hand on my hand, you know, or something. And I had a big paper cut at the time, you know, just mm-hmm. it was on my thumb. It was just like a big paper cut. And when I looked down after they'd gone, kind of, mm-hmm. there was a big spot of blood on the paper cut. And I was like, oh no, I was like, should I do something about this? Or, you know,
yeah.
So then, but either way, so just back to when they were there then, so then, you know, they started filling up the bags and stuff. But then I heard at the same fire door from the day before, I heard like noise, you know, and the old owner's wife had rung her son who lived upstairs. Mm-hmm. So he kind of came down the back way mm-hmm. and like he was able to get in the fire door, like fair play to him, you know, like.
Yeah.
And then he just told them the guards were coming, you know, they had to go. And they did finish up pretty quick then, you know, and they kind of
sounds almost like a superhero moment, is it? Superman came in.
That was what he was like, you know, and it was lovely. And actually, his mother came in then afterwards, and you know, made me a cup of tea, and she was like, "You need sugar." Like, I never have sugar in my tea, but she was like, "You need sugar," you know, at this point now. And I was like, "Oh no, I'm grand."
But what happened next?
I think we were all really in shock then the second day again. And we went across the, or then I think I realized about the blood on my hand, you know, mm-hmm. and I just went to see the GP across the road. Mm-hmm. And then he just suggested to go to the mater anyway, like it probably, you know, mm-hmm. we were saying, you know, what to do, but just in case, you know. So I went down to the hospital then and got like immunoglobulins, and I got a Hep B vaccine because I didn't have that at the time. Mm-hmm. Then I had to take the anti-HIV kind of medicine, you know. So that was it. So I remember being in the hospital like that day, just because. So what happened after those guys left the pharmacy, I think one of them ran into a big pane of glass. So mm-hmm. we'd heard this from the guards because I think they'd been caught then or something, mm-hmm. but they were being hospitalized. One of them was hospitalized. So I was mm-hmm. just like, oh my God, if I bump into, I don't know why I was so nervous about this, but it was like, if I bump into him now in the hospital, you know.
You could be in the same hospital as this guy that you've met twice in the last 2 days and they haven't been pleasant encounters.
Yeah. And there was something as well about like, if he was, because I had to take those medicine, and I mean, it was probably overkill, you know, in a way, but anyway, I was taking it for a while, you know. But if he would have told, because he was caught at the stage, if he would have told his status, like his HIV status, or if he would have allowed access to his medical details, like I wouldn't have had to take them. But he like refused that as well, you know. He wouldn't tell them that, you know. So
how is it then, like how is it after that? Because the first day you shrugged it off, the second day you found yourself in hospital potentially with the guy who caused all this hassle. How has it been since then? Or, you know, how did it affect you? How did you get over it?
Yeah. So
or did you get over it?
Yeah. So ongoing then after that, like I couldn't work in that shop anymore, kind of. I was maybe working in some of the other shops as part of the chain. Mm-hmm. But I mean, the other people that worked in that shop were back there, you know, fair play to them, kind of, you know. But I, you know, so that was that. And but after that, I suppose then I had this thing where I was taking this medicine as well, you know, the anti-HIV stuff. So I had to go back then to the infectious diseases clinic in the matter. And like, when I look back at it, like, this is nearly practically something that has scared me more in some ways than the actual holdup itself. Yeah, I remember being there and there was all these prisoners, you see, from Mountjoy across the way in handcuffs in there with the guards. And I'm waiting to speak to the doctor as well. Like, and I just was like, how did I end up in this situation? You know,
It's not what they teach in college about being a pharmacist, is it?
Yeah, like that's the thing. Like, it's not what you expect. You know, I'd at that stage had done my 4 years and done my pre-reg, and I had a different idea, kind of, I suppose, of what pharmacy was going to be. Like, I didn't expect this kind of straight away. You know, so made me question, in some ways, like, what have I done? You know.
Really?
Yeah.
Has this been a bad choice, you mean, in terms of the career? Or what have I done to deserve this?
Yeah, I suppose both.
Okay.
I suppose I wasn't going to change, but I was just shocked, I suppose, by what had happened, you know.
Of course you were.
So that was it. But then eventually, like, yeah, I stopped. I did come off the medicine and stuff. And then that, because when I was taking that was on my mind the whole time, you know.
Of course being it was.
So after like a short while, I came off that. And then I took maybe a week off work after it.
Is there anybody you could talk to about it? Or did you talk to anybody who'd been through similar experiences?
Yeah, so at the time I was craving to talk to people like who'd been through a similar experience. And, you know, and that was really, I found that really helpful, kind of. So that's kind of something that has motivated me to kind of do this podcast, because it's something that I really wanted at the time, you know. And and also, but then on the other hand, like, it was, everyone I spoke to was really kind of like, oh yeah, it happened, it's terrible, and it, like they were upset about it, but they'd got over it. But I couldn't see myself at that point, nearly, you know, the way.
It took you a while to get over it.
Yeah.
And what were the lasting impacts for you? You've talked before about how it actually did impact on your sense of security in certain situations.
Yeah. So for a long time, you know, for a while afterwards, I would just be looking at the door, like, if someone came in with a hood, or, you know, if it was a wet day, kind of, or, you know, sunglasses and that, or, you know, like, if they were all bundled up, kind of, I just kind of wouldn't like that. And but then, like, you know, as time went by, it got easier, sort of. So, like, now I wouldn't be like that, you know. But it did take a while, kind of, just looking at the door. And there was a lady I was working with then. So I was working in different shops of the same company, kind of. And she like had mentioned, she was like, look, you need to do something about this. You need to see someone, or, you know. She didn't say it to me. She said it to my boss, actually. Like, she was like, that poor girl is, you know, distraught, or, you know,
traumatized.
The way. Yeah. So that was it. But, you know, and then my boss suggested it, but I just never kind of took him up on it. I just said, like, it's fine, you know, it's grand.
But so what stopped you taking him up on it?
Well, like, I was putting on a brave face. So, like, I thought that, well, so this is the thing, what I know now is, like, I thought at the time, so when I was speaking to other pharmacists about it, like, it just seems like everyone gets over it. So I was like, oh, and it's kind of a laughter kind of nearly about it, you know. So I was kind of like, oh, look, this happens to all pharmacists. This is just what we have to accept. Like, because, you know, I was kind of newly qualified. So I was like, this must be just how it is. So I just have to laugh and move on and, like, pretend that I'm fine too about it, you know.
And you weren't.
I wasn't, no, because I don't know. I just feared for my safety, like, in the pharmacy, you know.
I think anybody would, but I think it's very interesting the amount of things that we accept and put up with as part of our profession. I remember not being held up. Fortunately, I haven't had the sort of experience you've had, but you never know how you're going to react. I've had a guy hit me as he took a codeine bottle and kind of storm off out of the shop. You can imagine the sort of conversation we were having about codeine. And I ran after him. Now, don't ask me what I think I was going to do with this guy. He was 6 foot something. But I you know, and I always felt, well, if I ever got held up, give them whatever they want. Give them the medicines, give them the cash.
Yeah.
And yet here I am chasing this thug about a bottle of codeine. I don't know why. I was more concerned that he was going to drink it all, I think. Which he duly did in front of me. He got out to the front of the shop, opened it and lugged it in one and threw it there. But like you say, came back and laughed about it.
I know.
But actually, it's no laughing matter.
in many cases, and we need to stop that bravado. We need to kind of accept it.
I know, and that's the thing. Like, I mean, pharmacy owners aren't going to be too happy about me saying this now, but you know, like, as we're, you know, we're the pharmacists kind of in there, and like, we have so many other things to do, you know, with staff and all different things. And like, another thing that we're doing also is like securing these really, these medicines with all these, that have all these rules and regulations like attached to them.
And a high street value, very valuable on the street.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're like security also, you know, in some ways. So like, you know, I mean,
and it sounds, Alva, from your previous story, you're also managing the sandbags to manage the flooding. Like, you're a flood defence too.
Yeah. No, even though I hadn't been working there that long, but I was, I suppose I was talking about that. All right. Yeah. So yeah, that's the thing, you know. So like, it's like, I wonder, should there be more around security in pharmacies, you know, since we do have so many rules that we have to adhere to do with the medicines. I mean, they're in a safe, but what do you do? I mean, you have to open the safe if someone comes in with a knife to you. But I mean, the security guard is going to be the same, but just something to think about.
What I often hear with these reports is a call for greater Garda surveillance. But actually what you're saying is there's a couple of different things. One, if it happens, we need to address the psychological aspect and stop and address that, not to accept that this just happens. And you said you found it really helpful to talk to other pharmacists. What were the sorts of, and some of them were all bravado. If you knew that somebody was going through this now, what would your advice be to them?
So I would say just afterwards, just, you know, do take some time off. I kind of didn't really think that would be needed. Like, I did take a week off afterwards, but I think like, if it does happen, like, don't go in the second day. Just, you know, go home immediately that day, you know.
And that's quite hard for pharmacists to accept, isn't it? You know, because we go in no matter how sick we are, no matter how we feel, we tend to always be quite diligent about turning up, because we know we can't, the patients can't get their medicines if
exactly.
we're not
there. And if we say we're going home, then, you know, the shop has to close if we don't get another pharmacist. Yeah. So you're slow to say you're going home.
So a pharmacist to have the courage to say that is one of
that's
the things
it.
You'd...
Yeah, okay. I think courage, because I suppose the age I was at the time, I would have been 23 or something, you know, I mean, I would have been probably, you know, shy, or I wouldn't have had much life experience, you know. I mean, I would actually say this, like, going to college, we had a great time and everything, and then this catapulted me into adulthood, I would say, this experience, like, you know, because I wouldn't have been exposed to probably any kind of thing like that before, you know.
But catapulting into a not nice adulthood, you know, the serious side of adulthood. So that must have had a profound effect on you.
Yeah, like, it did. You know, it did at the time, but, you know.
And so what sort of things helped you get over it ultimately?
Well, just time was the the main thing, you know. I took security seriously working after. I still do. Like, you know, I would make sure that everything, you know, was okay. In terms of, if I noticed anything suspicious, you know, I wouldn't let it just lie or people hang around, you know.
But I suppose what I did ask you, and I interrupted you there, so I should go back and ask, if there was a pharmacist going through this, what's your advice to them? So one you mentioned earlier was take time.
Taking time, you know, would definitely be really important. Also, I would say definitely seek a counsellor. If you, like I didn't at the time, but it would be nice to see somebody outside, like, your group of kind of colleagues and outside of your family, just to talk about, like, what happened, and even just to talk through it, you know, because I suppose you tell everybody the story so much, but, you know, I suppose everyone's telling you, oh, it's fine and that, you know, but somebody else to talk to about it, you know.
So maybe rather than talking about the facts of the story and how it was, more how it impacts on you and the psychological stress it's going to have caused.
Exactly, yeah, because that's the thing. Like, I suppose it will cause something for you. And if you just kind of admit that and just kind of move on with it, then knowing that, like, it's not normal, like, and it's okay to be, like, afraid at work, you know, the way, just for temporary, but, like, that obviously that shouldn't continue, you know, and it didn't for me, but you know, it, anyway, now, back then, I suppose counselling wasn't as kind of, people wouldn't have done it as much, maybe, or you know, especially, like, for something like work related like that kind of. So, but I think nowadays, you know, we're much more kind of progressive on that. So
progressive, yeah. And in this podcast series and the things that pharmacists are asking us to do is to open up the conversation on things like this. So I think it's incredibly good to have it as a conversation opener.
Yeah, so like that should be standard. So that, taking a bit of time off, talking to someone, and then also just yourself, just check in with yourself to say, am I happy to go back to this environment? And also then when you get back to work, just to make sure you're happy that it's a nice, secure environment and that, you know, you're willing to go back to work happy, kind of, basically.
What occurs to me, Alva, is you were incredibly stoic about it. You were offered counselling, you said no, you don't need it, and kind of got on with it. Looking back, you wish perhaps you'd been a little bit different in how you'd managed that, I think.
Yeah. So but like hindsight is really good, you know, for everything. You know, you can see what you should and shouldn't have done, you know.
And so that's been your motivation for doing this series, the podcast, isn't it? So that you can help people who are in that sort of situation realise it takes time to, you should stop and reflect on it.
Yeah, because if it does, like, until it happens to you, I suppose you don't really think much, you know, you don't think about much about it. And like you said yourself as well, like, that you don't know how you're going to react to it, like whether you're going to freeze or you're going to like fight back, or you know, you just don't know. So I suppose it's opening the conversation to see, like, if this happened to you, what would you do? And I just would like people to think that if it did happen to you, just go home straight away after it happens, and just just think about it and just allow it to process, you know. It is part of maybe working in a pharmacy, but I suppose the way we deal with it then is what will help us.
Well, if we know that it is such a commonplace thing to happen, I suppose we first and foremost need to acknowledge that and try and prevent it. And then if it does happen, and I'm sure there are people listening to this who probably can resonate with a lot of what you've said, and maybe it's happened to them and they haven't processed it. And there are services like the Health Practitioner Matters. I know practitionerhealth.ie is a place where pharmacists can access services for any aspects of stress that they encounter. So I would encourage anybody who's listening to this who maybe has a similar experience to make contact with any sort of counsellor, but practitionerhealth.ie is a service specifically for pharmacists who would have, pharmacists, doctors and dentists who would have similar experiences. Okay, so thinking about going forward and how we address it, you've talked about the pharmacy being aware and about the pharmacists themselves. I know this is probably a hard question. You didn't get counselling. And you mentioned to me before, it did have impact on you for quite a long time, didn't it? It took a long time to get over it. Are you happy to say anything about that, Alva?
Yeah, so I would say after probably a few years, until I was over, like, maybe like looking at the door, just being aware who was in the shop all the time, kind of, you know. So it took a few years for that. But then kind of even after that has passed, like, now I would say, like, say, for example, when the terrible terrorist attacks happened in France, you know, I remember just thinking, like, I remember thinking, God, again, like, what would happen if it was just, you know, where I was working was in town, you know, and like, what would happen if they came and did that here, you know, and like, I was sure. So I was on real high alert, kind of a state of high alert, you would say, like, during all of that time, just thinking. But then that's kind of going back to, like, I had like fears which I thought were irrational at the time, you know, like that the men would come back in like another day, you know. But, you know, I was thinking, oh, but work is the safest place. And I went to work the second day after, you know, for me, and they came back. So I suppose that sort of validated then in my head that, like, if I have irrational fears, that they might come true.
So that aspect of what some people would say, oh, you're catastrophizing and thinking the worst, you potentially did that second morning once you were going into work, and then exactly what you were afraid of happened.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah. So, like, even though it doesn't really impact my life, but I mean, I would consider that part of my personality. You know, people are probably like, oh, you're all, you know, you're like, you know, am I being dramatic or something? You know, the way, but I
and as pharmacists, like, we tend to be quite attuned to risk at the best of times. So
exactly. You know, risk adverse probably. But you know, but yeah, so like, that's it. But I mean, it's not really impacting my life now too much, but it's just something that that I would still attribute to that happening, you know. So I suppose everyone has their story, and like this is just part of like my story,
part of
you know.
Your story. Well, yeah. Thank you for sharing your story with us, because one of the things that's happened with the Institute over COVID is that pharmacists have requested information and support around practical issues and well-being issues, and this is one that has come up in our discussions, and you've been very generous in just walking us through step by step the emotional impact, because the statistics of 4 in 5 pharmacists are victims of crime, and sometimes that's shoplifting, or sometimes it's much more severe. They trip off the tongue lightly, don't they? But when you stop and actually think about the personal impact on somebody at the start of their career, it is significant and shouldn't be ignored, and we need to talk about it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
Well, look, I think that you've been incredibly brave to talk about it and to share your information. It is some time since this happened, but you're sound like, you know, you're using that experience in a positive way now to let other pharmacists hear. And hopefully there won't be too many pharmacists who need to come and use this podcast and who need to go to Practitioner Health Matters. But for all of us to increase our awareness and be aware of how we can mind our colleagues and mind ourselves, I think it could be incredibly useful. So thank you so much for sharing your story on that.
No, you're welcome. Hopefully somebody might identify with it, or and it might help someone also in the future. So
thank you very much. If there's if this has resonated with people, as I say, do reach out and use services like practitionerhealth.ie. Also, feel free to contact us in the Institute. We're always guided by what pharmacists need and want, and it's our role to facilitate that. So if we need to have a webinar or a greater discussion about this or a debate, we're very happy to facilitate that. Any final words, Alva, that you'd like to?
Yeah, no, it's great to get the word out there that I suppose that it's an important issue, and we should treat it like that.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Pharmacist. If you like what you hear, please subscribe wherever you listened to this episode. And for more information, you can follow us on Twitter @ResilientPharm.